But you know, I'm going to do that next time I'm in a relationship. When I'm having sex with a dude and we're listening to Luther, I'm going to whisper in his ear, you know he was singing to a dude. See how he reacts. And based on that reaction, then we'll know how we can move forward.
If he gets soft, he's not the guy for you, and you got to let him go. He's got to stay hard through that information, you know?
Or maybe that might entice him.
And then he gets harder. And then you're like, hell yeah, this dude's woke. Let's keep going. Yep, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another phenomenal episode of My Mama Told Me, the podcast where we dive deep, deep into the pockets of Black conspiracy theories, and we finally work to prove that each one of those bumps on Morgan Freeman's face represents another horcrux that allows him to live forever. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, he has split his soul amongst all of them little dots. I've counted them. He's about 378 split souls at this point. And I don't know what his plan is. Why he would hide his horcruxes right in the center of his face is beyond me, but that's what the man is doing. And I'm not even sure we can call him a man anymore. That goddamn old ass wizard, Morgan Freeman, is out here just splitting in little ass pieces and covering himself with them. I'm your host, Langston Kerman, coming in misbehaving as always, hot as I like to call it. I'm happy to be here. It's an exciting episode. This is a groundbreaking episode, which I'm not even sure my guest is aware of, but it's a groundbreaking episode because it's the first ever episode where we are expanding the My Mama Told Me multiverse. We are moving out of just Black shit and moving into communities that also have conspiracy theories, that also know the dangers of Whitey and the white devil. Do you know what I mean? We're moving into the My Mama Told Me multiverse, and my guest today is the perfect introduction to that multiverse because she's so goddamn funny. She's hilarious. You've seen her on so many things. She was on They Ready on Netflix, but more importantly, she has a brand new special that is out, available to you now. Technically, it's not out as we're talking, but it's out, motherfuckers, by the time you're listening. And you bitches better go listening to it. You better watch it. Fuck listening to it. You watch it. You lock your eyes on it because it's amazing. She's so funny. It's called Fighting Words, and it's on HBO Max, and you need to go watch it, and she's great. Please give it up for my guest, Miss Ida Rodriguez.
Thank you. I've been laughing. First of all, I was like, when I heard the theme song, I started like grooving, and then I would listen to the words.
Yep.
And I was like, is this Thundercat?
Oh, we can't afford Thundercat. But we did get my comedian friend Nick Chambers to put some lyrics and music down. So I'm honored. I'm honored that you danced to our dumb shit.
I just want to say one thing. In the Latinx, Latine, Latino community, we got Black shit too. Because a lot of us are Black.
That's right. That's fair.
Okay.
I do not mean to dismiss the Blacks of all communities. I know there are Blacks everywhere, and I only mean to say that we are expanding our universe and opening up to conversations beyond just Black shit if we so choose.
Got it. Nice, though. Nice.
Hell yeah.
You know we got conspiracy theories. We also are the descendants of slaves. So there's a lot of folklore.
It's almost as if white people did the same trick to all of us and it just worked. It just worked differently. Not better, not worse, just differently on everybody's shit.
They did it in different dialects and languages.
You guys got a sexier dialect, I think, out of the whole thing. We got shitty ass English and I don't know. Yeah. I would have rather. Yeah, Spanish sounds cooler for slavery, I think.
Oh my gosh. This might, you know what? Let's get canceled together. Let's do this shit.
Hell yeah. That's my goal. I don't know what you came here for. If it's not for cancellation, what game are we playing?
Yeah, I know. That's fine.
All right, let's dive in because you came with a conspiracy theory that I had heard for years growing up. I never knew enough to even verify or deny the validity of this conspiracy theory, but I feel like it's a classic, a very classic conspiracy theory in pop culture and the Black community, all sorts of communities, I imagine. But you said, my mama told me.
Luther Vandross was secretly gay.
Man, I heard that so much. I guess what makes it such a mystery is that you never saw Luther with a partner.
Right.
None.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a theory on a theory when it comes to this. Because if Luther was in fact gay, and his music that was about love resonated with so many heterosexual people,
yep,
then it would prove what we hear from the LGBTQ community all the time, is that love is love.
Yeah. Okay. I like this.
No, I'm saying?
Okay, so what you're suggesting is that Luther, being a person living in the closet, for lack of a better term, is not at all a barrier from our ability to accept the love that he's offering to the world. That when he sings these songs, even though he may potentially be singing about a man, it still resonates so well with me or any other heterosexual person that maybe this gender fluidity isn't this foreign, dangerous theory, but really is just the way that we've always been.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. I was like, my ex, he dedicated Superstar to me. That was his song for me. But he was also a little bit homophobic.
Yeah.
And I would be like, yo, you feel about your boo the same way Luther feels about his boo.
Yeah. Okay. So was he... Were you calling it out? Were you like, yo, hey, by the way, that song you dedicated to me, you know, that's the that's a gay man that's singing about another man when he's singing it.
Well, yeah, I was like, allegedly, right? So what does that mean?
And was he like, nah, get the fuck out? What was his response to this then?
He would say, Luther is not gay. Mm. He just keeps his business to himself. I was like,
whoa.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Because that introduces, I think, a pretty complicated layer to all of this, right? That in a lot of ways, Luther's sexuality was a very open secret in popular culture, right? We all sort of knew that Luther was gay, but nobody really wanted to talk about it. Do you think that's a reflection of homophobia, or is that merely wanting the story to still be able to exist for whoever we so choose to dedicate our music to? You know, he wants to be able to keep it so that when he dedicates this song to you, it's not quote unquote tainted by someone else's experience.
Well, I mean, everybody's okay when the people are allegedly straight, right?
Right.
So why does it matter? Even if he was openly gay, why would it matter?
Right. That in theory, Luther comes out, he says, this song is dedicated, this song I wrote is about a man. It shouldn't change the lyrics. It shouldn't change the feeling that comes from this thing. It should just be a different intent than we've placed on it.
I just stopped listening to Frank Ocean.
Yeah.
I never stopped.
Right.
And you know, when he was singing, I didn't think about you.
Yeah.
You know, he could have been thinking about some penis.
Yeah.
Just like me.
And honestly, that probably makes it connect better for you.
Absolutely. It's like,
y'all both sing about dick.
Yeah. That's how
it goes. Wow. Okay, so at what point, let's trace some of the history here for you. At what point do you think you became aware that Luther Vandross may have allegedly been singing about men rather than his predominantly female audience?
You know, I would think that it was when I got older, because the elders in my family used to listen to Luther. And I was a kid, so I don't know. I thought it was just a man singing. But when I got older and they started sending me the song saying, I'm dedicating this to you.
Yeah.
So I think that that's when I was like, hey, man, I never seen this man with a woman or anybody. I'm always seeing him by himself. And I'm like, who is he singing to? And then when you watched him, you know, Luther used to wear the best eyeliner. Because he used to wear it in the waterline is what we call it. And his eyeliner never ran. And I've always, as a Puerto Rican girl, we wear eyeliner, you know, sixth grade. We start sneaking the eyeliner to go to middle school. And I would always try to find the perfect eyeliner I could put on my waterline that wouldn't smear.
You wanted that Luther line.
I wanted that Luther line. So I think it was a little bit older, like maybe when I became like a teenager, you know, 17, 18.
And to his credit, in terms of the makeup of it all, he was a very sweaty man, like objectively a very sweaty person. And for him not to have runny eyeliner or runny makeup is that's impressive.
Absolutely impressive. And, you know, not only if you say he's sweaty, his costumes, remember the sequence tops, the shirts, and that's really hot. It's super hot. So the lights, you know, and
sure.
And then Luther was actually a real singer. So it wasn't, there was no auto tune, no assistance. He wasn't singing the tracks. So that's a lot of cardio, you know, like that's a lot of work. cardio.
His diaphragm is being compressed quite a bit to get some of them notes that he's sitting out.
Yeah. So I mean, he was putting in the work. He was sweating and the eyeliner never ran.
Never ran.
Him and Prince, never.
And so as you're growing up, because I do think that this is an important element to this whole like tracking of someone's sexuality in relation to popular music, popular culture. Are you looking at Luther and going, this is a person that I guess is a sexual being? Is Luther sexy to you as a kid? Or is he just Luther? Like, where does he live in that whole spectrum?
Oh, man, he was a captain of romantic, like the captain of love music. Like, it was just, you know, the quintessential love song. Like, Superstar is probably one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
He was a song with Gregory Hines that was, there's nothing better. I mean, some of the most amazing music that I would say love, just love music. But we did have sex to it. So it was it was sexy music. It was sexual music.
Yeah, it's, I guess I asked that question because I'm interested in sort of the ways that sexuality or a person's sexuality, rather, doesn't necessarily matter in terms of our enjoyment of like the art that they create. That in a lot of ways, if you look at these people as poets, right? Like, I didn't need to want to fuck Walt Whitman to be able to enjoy the sexuality that came out of Walt Whitman's poetry. Like, it still has all of the elements that you need to feel like a sexy, sensual person. And I think the same might be true for a Luther Vandross. Whereas, you know, there are artists who they exude a sexuality that you do want to press into. I think Luther is one of those that, like, you don't want to fuck Luther, but you kind of enjoy the sex he's able to create with his music.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful soundtrack. And, you know, that's the thing that people who belong to the LGBTQIA plus community.
Hell yeah. Hit all them notes. Let's go.
You know what I'm saying? The reason that they probably feel like we objectify them. We absorb whatever they can give us so long as they remain silent about who they are in that aspect. And I think that's kind of shitty because Kim Kardashian is always exuding her sexuality all over the place and people enjoy that. And she's rich, rich, rich off of it. So why can't Luther talk about, you know, that's why I respect Frank Ocean, because Frank Ocean flipped it. Frank Ocean was like, I'm going to sing about what I want to sing. I'm about to tell y'all how much I like it. And you can rock with it or you can leave it alone. And I respect that. I'm like, why aren't you able? We've been hearing these other stories forever. Why not them?
Yeah. And even more to that point, Frank did it at a time where it wasn't a convenient choice, right? Mm-hmm. That like, I think Frank probably came out, if I'm remembering correctly, 2015, 2014 even. It might have been that around that time with Channel Orange. And or at least preceding Channel Orange. And part of that, it's his first album. This isn't a guaranteed, like, great response from the internet and from the communities that are receiving this. He could have easily been put in a bucket that ruins his career. But he's like, nah, this is who I am. I want y'all to know who I'm singing about and what these words actually mean, or at least some of what it means. And I'm not going to, like, hide behind the facade of sort of like veiled general sexiness in order to get that across.
I love Frank Ocean. That mixtape that he made before the album is probably one of the best pieces of musical art that I've heard. I mean, I love Frank Ocean. Everything that he does, that Channel Orange album is epic. And, you know, just to hear someone just being true. And I think, you know, Frank Ocean is younger than I am, and to see someone at that age teaching somebody older, and I would say people older than me because I grew up around people that were fluid and people that were queer, but it's dope. I love it. And I'm sit down somewhere. Just go sit down. If I don't get it, people who get so bothered by this stuff, like, go somewhere. This is not an invitation, bitch. Sit down. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Don't make it weird. Just enjoy the thing or move elsewhere. But you don't have to make this your shit either.
Listen,
way.
Listen, Luther sweated so that Frank Ocean could perspire.
There it is. We got to put that on a t-shirt somewhere. Okay, let me ask you this, because I do think this is an interesting element to it, right? You're introducing this Frank Ocean conversation, which I think is really important, of him making the choice to come out, be public with his sexuality in a way that we haven't seen from a lot of artists, certainly not at that point in American history. What do you then think is the root cause of Luther not feeling that same safety to do what Frank did, or at least even remotely introduce the idea that he might be not a heteronormative man performing in front of, women who are swooning for him?
I think it's generational. Like, I don't think Frank Ocean felt safe at all. I think Frank Ocean took a chance and knew, you know, the toxic masculinity has been around forever. I mean, it's connected to everything that has been a problem for all people on the planet. But I think that Luther was probably more engulfed in a generation of people that were religious because Luther did a lot of music that, you know, he sang, you know, could sing a gospel song just as much as a love song. And I think that it was generational. It was a lot of religious connection to a lot of singers from that era who initially started in the church.
Right.
So I think there was a lot of that. And I do think that the social consequences for being gay during a time when AIDS became popular and people were hearing a lot about AIDS was probably something that would deter somebody from saying they were gay, because people would associate being queer with AIDS at that time.
Sure.
It was such a gay disease, is what they used to call it. And I think people would be like, nah, I'm going to just roll with this. You know, I'm going to just not say anything. I can't imagine how hard it must have been at that time.
Yeah, I think that's a super fair point. And it makes me think about we've done episodes on like Eazy-E and even we've talked a bunch on this show about Magic Johnson and just how quickly during the periods that they were sort of their HIV positive, they get AIDS, whatever it is for them, and how quickly it turns into a conversation accusing them of being homosexual, accusing them of sort of having like these sordid affairs with men simply because it is a quote unquote gay disease at that period. At that point in time, we're calling it something that it isn't, it doesn't need to be. And it isn't, but that's what the world is. And so to your point, Luther may be making a choice to sort of like push against that connection by simply keeping his business to himself.
Mm-hmm. And especially in that hip hop community, I can't even imagine, you know, like, look at the stuff that Lil Nas X goes through in 2021. Yeah. And though Lil Nas X pushes back and leans into it, but it, I mean, people are really bothered by I don't know for the life of me why people care so much about other people's sexuality, sexual preferences and identities. I don't for me, you could tell me, hey, I identify as LMNOP, and that's what I want you to call me. I'd be like, all right, LMNOP, you like crab legs? Yeah. That's me. Because let's go. I just don't understand why people got so preoccupied with other people's business like that. It's just.
Yeah, I do think to some extent I feel weird about this, not because I disagree with you at all. I think you're absolutely right. We should just mind our business. But I'm nosy as fuck. I do want to know what people who people are fucking and how they're doing it, but not because either version of it grosses me out or any version of it grosses me out, but more because, nigga, I want a copy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to do something weird with my wife and see what she's into and like, let me know. And part of, I think to your point, if we spent more time allowing people to just voice exactly who they are in a public way, we all become more liberal and comfortable in our own bodies. Yeah. That we all can suddenly, our expectations shift. And now it's not this scary, dangerous thing that a man presses into another man. It's just like, oh, that's what y'all do? I'm going to try that out, but in my way, and see if that makes me feel more whole as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I think that the people who continue to be afraid of that, and that's what it is underneath it is fear. Because if you don't agree with the lifestyle, you know, like my go-to example, I don't really like country music like that.
Yeah.
So I don't ever go to Garth Brooks' page and be like, yo, your shit is trash. Like, right. I never, you know what I'm saying? I never do that. It's just not my thing. I just don't listen to country music. Yeah. And I think that it's just very interesting to me how people feel the need to police others. And it has something to do with you. Because the only things that I react to like that, where you feel a visceral reaction from me, or anything, it's something that it pokes at something that I'm feeling within myself.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So lesbians can be around me having an orgy and I'm not going to be like, ooh, I'm going to beat everybody with a belt because this is wrong. I just be like, I'm going to go outside because y'all might get something on me and I'm going to, I like this shirt. You know what I'm
saying? I'm not at the place where I need pussy juice flying on my good shirt.
I'll
walk away. But y'all do you.
But do you, boo, you know, can I videotape it? But I'm not, you know, I just don't understand why it's such a big deal. And I do believe that because of those things is probably why someone like Luther, who made so much money on love music, that he was also protecting his bag.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so many people, I mean, I everybody that I know, when they list like top 10 love songs, they always got a Luther song on there.
Yeah. I even as you're saying it, I'm thinking of top 10s in my head, and like immediately here and now, boom, that's right. It's up there. You know what I mean? I can't think of many that are above that. Mm-hmm. And I think you made the point earlier, and we should cover this before we run off to break. But I think it's also important. You talked about safety. Mm-hmm. You talked about sort of like this question of whether or not people feel safe or afraid or whatever it is. And I think part of the way that they take advantage of this fear and this safety is by conflating those things with religion, right? Yeah. So you make it so that if you are not following this set of rules, this traditional set of norms, you are not only unsafe for your lifestyle, but you are unsafe for your eternal soul. Yes. And so all these people start to hate the idea of Luther Vandross coming out and being his freest self because it could potentially damn their eternal soul. And that's a pretty fucked up weight to put on both ends of things, both the people that are hating and the person that is hated.
Yeah, but you know, and that's funny because it's hypocritical to me. I grew up in the church. I'm like, y'all don't ever feel that condemned when you find out other people are fucking before they get married. You know what I'm saying? That they're fornicating. You know, y'all make jokes about the pastor fucking the lady in the pew and cheating on his wife. You don't worry about your eternity when you making jokes about side bitches. You're not like, oh, you got a side bitch. Right. You're not saying, oh, I'm going to burn in hell because I got a side bitch. Why? It's a fascination with this stuff that is really intriguing to me. That is like, why are you worried about it so much? If God is who you say God is, then God going to take care of it. Why are you trying to do God's business?
Yeah, and it's not like God was like, yo, these you can't break, but these other ones you go crazy. You could you could eat out the neighbor as much as you want, but don't you dare suck the neighbor's dick. That's how dare you. It's like, nah, he's like, all this is sin. You're all sinners. So figure out how to be the best version of yourselves. It doesn't really matter until, you know, your rooster comes a calling, you know?
Yeah.
That's quoted from the Bible. Your rooster comes a calling. I think that's in Job somewhere.
You know what? The scariest scripture I ever saw in the Bible was about clergy. Like, the Bible was scary, right? The Bible said, better you not be born than to mislead my sheep. Like, that just creeped me out. So that means that all y'all people that are walking around leading the people and telling the people and condemning, you know, the poor gay fella in the church that's scared to come out and you condemning him, the consequences seem like they might be a little worse for you. Better you not be born? That's not like an abortion.
Right. He's like, bitch, I'd rather you didn't exist than trick a bunch of people into believing some bullshit.
Exactly. So I don't know what y'all doing out there, but I'm going to tell y'all, stop.
Stop. You better stop. All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Ida Rodriguez and more My Mama Told Me. And we are back.
Why are you gay?
Who says I'm gay?
You are gay.
Yeah, we're back here with more Ida Rodriguez, My Mama Told Me. We're still talking about goddamn Luther Vandross, arguably the greatest male singer of all time, and his difficult, difficult history with coming out and being honest. What is honest? Sharing with the world what he truly felt in his heart, which is that he wanted to kiss some boys. He wanted to hug and kiss some sweet men. I didn't have to make that sound silly. I could have respected it and been more decent to it. But, you know, this is where I'm at, Ida. This is how I behave at all times.
I love it.
Hell yeah. Let's jump into some of this research, because I do think some of this it's not going to blow your mind. I'll be honest with you up front, because all of the research more or less confirms what we already know to be true to be allegedly true about Luther Vandross. But it will, I think, introduce some questions that I would love to hear a bunch of your perspective on, because I do think they are somewhat challenging questions. So let's launch in. It seems to me that a fair amount of everything I found sort of confirms what we already know to be true, is that Luther Vandross spent the whole of his 54 years on this planet before he died in 2005, having to keep a secret about what he actually felt, which is that he was a homosexual man singing about men. That seems to be confirmed, and it's largely confirmed by a bunch of other celebrities and peers in the industry that, like, a lot of his friends came forward in the wake of his death to share the information that Luther was secretly gay.
Those snitch-ass bitches! You can't even trust somebody when you die!
So that, to me, is the core of the question that this introduces that I really would love to hear your thoughts on, because there is a laundry list, a literal laundry list of celebrities who have come forward talking about their relationships, not sexual relationships, but just closeness to Luther and the secrets that they shared between the two of them. And I'm wondering, what is the responsibility in all of this? Do they owe it to him to keep his secret and keep it going? Should they feel okay sharing his secret? I want to know what you think.
You know what? I think that if it was a secret, you should have kept it. And I'm almost curious to think how relevant these people are who would tell the secret and see if that would get them some hits. Because,
whoa,
you know what I'm saying? Like, let's say you had a sitcom in the 80s and nobody checking for you no more. They put a microphone in your face. Well, they skip past you to somebody who's relevant on the red carpet. And you're like, you know what? Luther was gay. And then they get the camera into them. And then you're like, okay. What's your name again?
All right. Wait a minute. You ain't got to keep walking. Come back. Don't step and repeat. Just step this way.
So I think that that's interesting. And if he didn't want you to know when he was alive, what would be the benefit of telling somebody after his passing?
Yeah, that was one of the things that I sort of struggled with, even as I was reading some of the sort of like breakdowns, the pieces of information I found. One of the first people that I bumped into who sort of talked about Luther's sexuality, and he does remain a pretty relevant person, at least in pop culture, is Lenny Kravitz. Lenny Kravitz wrote in his book, and this is where I think it starts to connect to some of what you're saying, is that he waited until he had an autobiography he's putting together, a memoir that he's putting together. And then he talks about a relationship that Lenny Kravitz, he was a roommate in the early parts of his career with this dude, David Lasley, who was a writer, producer, and worked closely with Luther. And Lenny says that in the conversations he heard Luther have with David Lasley, he understood Luther to be a very deeply sad and lonely person who was not able to ever come out and, you know, express his sexuality in the way that he wanted to.
That's what happens when your ex-wife marries Khal Drogo. You're like, you know what? I'm about to tell it all. I just think that I like Lenny Kravitz. I'm a Lenny Kravitz fan, but I just think that lacks integrity. Like if you knew, I mean, if this is based on your suspicions and you want to tell somebody about it, and this is what your speculation is, I guess it's one thing. But if it was a secret and you knew it was a secret, what's the point in telling anybody now? Like, what, you're going to out the people he was with? Like, it just brings pain to the people who love him.
I think even more confusing, challenging, the harder part of this decision is that this wasn't even firsthand information from Luther, right? You are overhearing a private conversation in phone calls and then sharing that information in a public way. And it's like, all right, if Luther told you personally, maybe there's more of a gray area in you sharing this as a part of your personal journey. But for you to just be like, hey, you know what I heard on the phone one time when I was chilling at the crib is that's dangerous. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not cool. I don't think that's cool.
Yeah. Okay, here's another example Bruce Valanche. You know Bruce Valanche? You familiar with Bruce Valanche? He's a dude who's, I guess, a comedic writer. He's always in a scooter. He looks real crazy. You'll recognize him as soon as you see him. But okay. Bruce Valanche, for some reason, was very close friends with Luther Vandross. I had no idea. I don't know why these two people would have ever looked at each other and wanted to hang out, other than the fact that they were both, I guess Bruce is gay and Luther was allegedly gay. So maybe it was some, you know, cool gay shit that they were hanging out on. Either way, Bruce Valanche says that Luther spent the entirety of his life and career deeply in the closet. Those are the words that he used, and sort of says that his friend constantly wished that he could have had a boyfriend. That's what he talks about, is that by the end of his career and life, he just really wanted a boyfriend.
Shit, get in line, Bruce. Luther, we all just want a boyfriend. I think it's kind of corny to tell on somebody after they, you know, that, because that the there are no consequences for that, like from the person.
Yeah,
I feel like Luther's cousins, they need to go get all these people talking shit about Luther. They need to go put hands on all these people.
Yeah, just beat the shit out of Bruce Valanche, break his big ass red glasses. You know what I mean?
Why y'all, you know what I'm saying? Like, why y'all snitching on the homie? Like, this is, I don't know. I just think I wouldn't do that to, I mean, any of my friends if they passed away. I wouldn't tell none of the secrets.
I do think, and you made this point earlier, and I think it's one worth repeating, is that the other sort of like frustrating part of this is if Luther were allowed to be his freest self, mm-hmm. him wanting a boyfriend wouldn't even be newsworthy, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's not an interesting mm-hmm. tidbit about a legendary performer and singer. That's just some shit we all go through. Mm-hmm. But because he wasn't allowed to be himself, this very small, almost meaningless piece of information now becomes coveted and treated as like gossip. And that's crazy.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's true. And, you know, like, you know, all these women who they got whole reality shows trying to find a man. You got men mm-hmm. on our reality shows trying to find a woman. They've got all kinds of different versions of this show, naked and people in running through the jungle trying to find a mate, people going to an island, people yeah. tempting each other with sex, you know, 19 bitches in the house trying to get a rose from a corny dude every week on a Monday. They got all kinds of versions of, and you know, people find it as entertainment. They're not writing think pieces about it or anything. But poor Luther, who just wanted to be with somebody that loved him and that he loved, couldn't even live out loud because it could affect his career.
Yeah.
You know, get kicked out of the church or whatever it was. That's just foolishness. We got too much time on our hands to be worried about other people's business.
Truly. And can I just say that if they change the name of The Bachelor to 19 Bitches in a House, I would watch. I know they'd lose a lot of viewers who are sensitive about language and the weird misogyny cooked into calling people bitches. But no, I would watch. 19 Bitches in a House, that sounds like a great show to me. And I'm subscribing immediately.
And listen, in the true fashion of pause, I am a woman. Therefore, I am owning the word bitch. And I can call myself a bitch. And I can use the word bitch. And I own it.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not shaming you at all. I'm merely representing the American audience who's going to sit there and go, how you can't call people bitches. It's like, listen, you don't know which bitch I was talking about when I said the word. I was talking about some boy bitches, too. Them boy bitches be in the house.
Hey.
We all bitches.
That's right. That's right, damn it.
And there's 19 of us. So the other person, and I think this gets into a slightly more complicated, and maybe complicated isn't even the right way of approaching this, but it is a slightly more complicated conversation, is that the other person who has been very public about quote unquote outing Luther was Patti LaBelle. Patti LaBelle, who was dear friends with Luther. Luther actually at one point was the president of her fan club, which I didn't know that. That like he was the official president of the Patti LaBelle fan club. But she went on Watch What Happens Live, the Andy Cohen show. And he asked, Andy Cohen asked about Luther's sexuality, at which point Patti LaBelle talked about it. She said, you know, I think that she said basically he did not want his mother to be, although she might have known, but he wasn't going to come out and say it to the world. And he had a lot of lady fans. And he told me he just didn't want to upset the world. And so I guess my question is, what responsibility do you think a person like Andy Cohen has, who is a homosexual person, who does understand maybe better than most the dangers of outing a person, be they alive or dead, to not even introduce this question to an old lady who's probably just going to be like, oh, yeah, I know about that. And, you know, say some stuff on TV.
Well, you know, Andy Cohen is part of this entity that makes a lot of money off of the exploitation off of Black people and people of color. You know, like Black women and in these shows that perpetuate, you know, stereotypes and shows some ugliness, which is real in everybody, not just Black women and women of color. But I just think it's interesting that a gay man would take that. You know, that's disappointing to say, what about, like, why would you do that? Why would you do that to that Black man? Why you do that? Like, When you yourself have complained about bigotry towards you for being a gay man, why would you do that?
Yeah.
That's part of the problem. That's what we push back against, right? Is that whole idea that people who are, you know, homosexual, people who are queer have to live in this place of secret who perpetuates. So asking somebody, ooh, do you think such and such was gay, is part of the problem.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you said that. And I think you put it in words that I wasn't even sure I knew how to put it in. But I do think that this sort of leads us into a great example of where intersectionality ain't intersecting, right?
That's it.
Like, you're talking all this shit about like wanting to be progressive for your community, wanting to protect people that live the life that you live. But when it comes to another person's experience who doesn't look like you, but does Venn diagram with you slightly, you're unable to see them with the same sensitivity and care that you probably would have seen a white counterpart.
Word. You just said it. A word. 100%. And that is why, you know, even when it comes to the argument of women, you talk about Black women and brown women and white women who teeter, you know, they jump back and forth between being victims and the oppressor. Like they, when you see it in the dynamic of the LGBTQIA plus community, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, someone said to me, it was my son, because we were talking about the LGBTQ community and this complexity that we talk about. And he's like, yeah, because white men can belong to that oppressed group. So in that group, there is a hierarchy where they sit at the top. So that's why, you know, we have to talk about intersectionality and we have to honor it, because the truth of it is that you get to son Luther Vandross when you a gay white man. Know what I'm saying? And can you imagine if somebody would, I mean, you just think about, like, if it would have been the other way and they did it to him.
Right.
He would have been
appalled. Nobody would have let that stand even for a second. And furthermore, there was some pushback in Patti saying what Patti said. But to your point, I think the larger, and it's unfair, I don't know that we have the right to decide whose fault is what in
who
all
brought
of this.
It up? Who brought it
right.
up?
I don't know that Patti went on there being like, you know what I'm about to do is out my boy.
Exactly.
I think Patti was just like, oh, we drunk, we talking shit. Yeah, I'll talk shit with you. And the reality is it was somebody choosing to be messy and a lady went in the dirt with him. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, you know, she becomes the target rather than he. And I think Andy knows that before he even asks the question.
Yeah, it's easy to come for her because there are no consequences for attacking an older Black woman. But if you don't come for this white Jewish man, there will be some consequences.
Yes. I think that's fair to say. So the other thing that this got me sort of cooking on, as we're asking this question of whether or not it's okay to out a person in their death, I ended up stumbling on this article about Whitney. It was an article called Whitney Houston and the Ethics of Posthumous Outing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that it talks about is the fact that Whitney, who was allegedly a bisexual woman, was outed by her ex-husband, right? That, like, Bobby Brown does an interview with Us Weekly when he is then working on his memoir called Every Little Step, which I know you all have in your homes. I know every single one of you listening has already read Every Little Step, so there's no reason for us to plug it. But Every Little Step, the Bobby Brown story, is available for your reading if you so choose. But Bobby is working on his memoir, and he then explains that Whitney was bisexual and had a relationship with her former assistant, Robin. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that falls in the same category for you of somebody just trying to take advantage of their sort of waning celebrity, or if this is something more complicated because they are in a relationship or had been in a relationship and were married, have children together, all of that.
Well, this is a really this is a touchy space because I know Bobby and I know his wife, Alicia. And I don't think that he... First of all, I don't think Bobby Brown is the king of New Edition, whether you want to admit it or not. And I know I'll probably get pushback from that, but he's probably is the most dynamic one that come out, you know, for all the reasons that he was a bad boy of R&B. He had the issues. He married the superstar singer. They, you know, you got to lay low. They got all the, you know, they got the Diane Sawyer interview. Like, he's the most dynamic thing to come out of there. I've been in the presence of Bobby Brown for a birthday party, and he was not with Whitney anymore. And I remember him singing on stage and he started crying, and he said he missed her. And from what I know, and I don't know firsthand because we don't talk about it, we're not that close. We see each other in passing. We've known each other for years. But we're not, like, close. We're not, like, homies. I believe Bobby Brown adored the shit out of Whitney Houston. Mm-hmm. Loved her in a way that was, you know, toxic, painful, deep, though.
Yeah.
And I do think that him sharing that, and I didn't even know he had a book. I didn't know about Every Little Step. But the fact that he... probably is talking about it is because he's still processing that. And, you know, you have to think, Bobby Brown is married to Whitney Houston, the mother of his daughter who also passed away. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of pain in all of that thing, that whole thing. And I did hear a lot about Whitney Houston being bisexual. I heard it when I first moved to L.A. from one of these dancers that danced in the videos and was like, yeah, she's... You know, he called out a bunch of names of women. He was like, they always talking about the men. But he was like, this woman, and this woman, they turn out all the girls.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting to hear his list. But I went and found him. He was in all their videos. And I was like, he might be making it up, but he's definitely been around these people. So I don't think that he would do that to maliciously or to try to bring attention to himself. Because I mean, Bobby, you give him the mic and a drink, and he can find a way. He don't have to even talk about Whitney, but
like they say in Jurassic Park, Bobby finds a way, you know.
I think that was just rooted in his pain. I do think that he adored that woman, and I don't think that he would do that to try to get, you know, attention off of her. Not the Bobby Brown that I've met, you know.
I got you. It introduced a even more complicated question in my head, not just of whether or not his intentions, and this isn't even about Bobby at this point, but more just generally about this entire idea, is more about the question, at least, that sort of like came to life, is the question of public responsibility, or rather how much these celebrities even owe to the public in relation to their sexuality and sexual identity, right? So, for example, in the article, Some people are arguing that it's obviously awful to out somebody posthumously, that like if they weren't ready to tell the world when they were alive, they're not suddenly ready to tell the world just because they passed away, and we should respect that. But then there are other people who argue that by sharing these people's stories, you are bringing more light to the communities that they potentially could represent, right? And specifically, they talk about Ed Koch of New York, former mayor of New York City. He dies in 2013, and then it becomes exposed, and maybe it was exposed the entire time. Maybe that everybody knew, similar to, you know, a Luther Vandross kind of situation, that he was homosexual, that he had homosexual relationships. But one of the things that happened is that during his time in as mayor, he's constantly getting all this pushback from AIDS activists, basically saying, why won't you speak up for the community that you could represent here? They're calling this a gay disease, and you, a gay man, should be out and open about how this isn't a gay disease. And if you support me, you support the communities that you're hurting with by saying all of these things. And Ed never said anything, and he never stepped out of his way to protect these communities. And so I guess my final question to you before we run off to another break is, what do you think about that in public responsibility? Does Ed owe the gay community anything? Or is he just meant to like keep rocking the way he wants to rock and it doesn't matter one way or the other?
No, he doesn't owe anybody anything. And I know people are going to probably push back on this, but nobody knows what Ed's emotional or psychological state was and where he had processed where he was in terms of his own sexuality. And what if that man wasn't ready to deal with that and came out and got dealt with some crazy stuff and ended up killing himself because of it? You know, like, it's just the fact that the public feels entitled to people's business because people have some sort of, even as a public figure, his responsibility to his community is to do the work that is described in that job description. It is not that he owes his personal life to anybody else, you know, and there are a lot of people dealing with a lot of different issues. Are you demanding that straight men tell you about their affairs? Are you demanding that straight men tell you about all the stuff that they're doing, or straight women? It's only when it comes to that community that people feel entitled to know. Like even the terminology, we're going to out you. You know what I mean? And like, there are consequences for people finding out about it. And that, why wouldn't you be petrified? Like, you don't know what it's going to be, you know? And his responsibility with what was going on with AIDS was to make sure that policy was in place and that it was enforced and that, you know, whatever those responsibilities connected to office, anything that he does is above and beyond. So if he decided to say, I am, and I'm going to speak up for this community because, you know, because of this, then that should be admirable. But that's not it's not required.
Right. I think that's fair. I think the responsibility a person in office has, in my mind, is to be careful and caring about every single person that they represent. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily to just place preference on the communities that they're deeply connected to. And ideally, the way that you represent all of these communities and care about all of these people is you are connected in small communities. And so you do the extra work to make sure that everybody is fairly represented. That said, it doesn't mean that, like you said, there are a lot of great leaders who love to cheat on their wives or their husbands or whatever it is. And that's not, they don't owe more to the non-monogamous community simply because that's who they represent. It's, yeah, we're all doing what we can to protect each other as best we can. And he clearly didn't feel comfortable telling everybody his business. And so maybe he doesn't have to suddenly out himself just because he's a famous person.
Yeah. And I mean, are all women who've had abortions that are in office, do they have the obligation to tell people that they have abortion when they're dealing with abortion? You know, like, it's It's just like, that's what drove like Bill Clinton to say he didn't exhale or he didn't inhale or whatever. It's just that, you know what I'm saying? All of that, this Salem attitude towards people and feeling like we owe that, you know, that the general public is entitled to the tea is just a function of, you know, how celebrity culture has become so toxic in this country. And, you know, and it bleeds into politics because politicians are celebrities, whether we want to admit it or not. And it's just gross. It's just gross.
Yeah. Let people's business be their business. Let everybody do their own freaky shit. And if they want to tell us about the freaky shit, you know, I'm happy to hear it. God damn, do I want to hear about it. But if not, that's okay. I'm on my business.
I'm with it.
All right, we're going to take one more break. We'll be back with more Ida Rodriguez and more My Mama Told Me. And we are back.
We're not going to let Joe Biden and Kamala Harris cut America's meat.
Yeah, we're back here with more Ida Rodriguez, more My Mama Told Me. We're still talking about Luther Vandross and his secret that he took to his grave and the one that Bruce Valanche would not allow him to keep. Bruce had to tell people that Luther Vandross was gay, and neither of us know why.
You know, that motivation is, I don't know, like, maybe even the fact that they were friends seems so off. And that's because of what we, you know, how we perceive people. And we're like, how do these two people know each other? But like I said, it's just that Andy Cohen thing. Like, I just don't think it's cool.
Yeah, I dig that. I think especially coming from a quote unquote white friend, you have extra care to probably take in outing somebody of a different race and, you know, a black person specifically in terms of like what's going to happen with his community, with his relationships, with his mother, no less. You know, his mother is this deeply religious person. And that was part of what Patti LaBelle said, was that like it was his mother's religious perspective that kept Luther in the closet in the first place. And the last thing she needs to learn it from, or the last person she needs to learn it from, is a goofy looking motherfucker like Bruce Valanche, you know?
When I run into him, I'm gonna tell him he gotta recite the first 10 lines from Never Too Much.
Uh-huh. I like that. Yeah, make him say it on one knee so he really earns it, you know? Because it's going to take him a minute to get down there. Bruce ain't built for kneeling. But yeah, he owes us an apology. He owes Luther and us an apology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's play a game. This is a fun game. It's a brand new game that I've cooked up for this podcast. It's called Make It Make Sense.
Your thoughts create your reality. Well, you already knew that, yet you still live a life that you dread.
Excuse me.
Make It Make Sense. This is a brand new game where I am going to introduce to you a conspiracy theory I had never heard of. And it's specifically a conspiracy theory that comes from the Dominican Republic. It's a conspiracy theory that y'all over in the Dominican are rocking with. And I would love for you to make it make sense for me. Help me understand what's happening in this scenario.
Okay.
So apparently in 2019, there was a string of deaths from a hotel where six different tourists visiting the Dominican suddenly died. They died in these mysterious ways after drinking from their mini bar.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, more than a few people started to speculate that this was a serial killer working the Dominican Republic, that there was somebody out intentionally trying to kill tourists as they were moving and shaking around the Dominican. And what I would love for you to do, Ida, is tell me what's happening here. What do you think the real mystery is from these people who are drinking from this mini bar and all dying in these mysterious, tragic ways?
So that's funny. I never heard that one. I'll tell you what I heard. I heard it was a governmental ploy to try to keep American people from going to the Dominican Republic because
this sounds like you about to spit some shit. This I ain't never heard this before. This is brand new to me, and all of this is brand new to me. Can we do some talk that talk? Can you break it all down in 30 seconds?
Yeah, no, this is what I heard. I would.
Okay, here we go. I'm gonna press the button and then you go crazy.
So I heard that the Dominican Republic and Haiti are on the island of Hispaniola. So France is who colonized Haiti, Spain colonized the Dominican Republic, and Haiti owes France for slavery. They own for being the ones to kick down the door for liberation. But what I heard was that there's this big old governmental push so that they can take over the island. That's why they're letting these people struggle. But tourism generates a lot of money. So they were trying to deter tourists from going there.
Whoa.
And that's why they were doing that, because it would keep the economy from flowing with the tourism dollars and let the country crumble so that they can go in and gentrify it and recolonize.
Whoa, holy shit. Wait a minute.
That's called motherfucking bars, nigga.
God damn it. So you're saying that this is an effort, or at least the theory is that this is an alleged effort to tank the island to across the board, because Haiti ain't doing too great on its own. The fucked up economy, the damage that is intentionally being done from other colonizing places, and certainly like
France.
The earthquakes and hurricanes and shit that hit that side of the island, it's already struggling.
Which is another conspiracy, that those are done by those heart machines, and that those are man made to cause destruction on the island so that they can go ahead and take it.
Yeah, we've talked about that a little on the podcast before, that Haiti's fucked up weather and earthquakes and all that shit is a result of weather control machines that the governments are intentionally creating. But to your larger point, that there might be a real effort, a conspiratorial level effort by all of these countries, or by a powerhouse country, to make these islands tank so that they can rebuild them as basically big ass Six Flags for people to go and visit.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Fuck.
Big Six Flags, that's funny.
What do we do? Is there anything that can be done about stuff like this? Is this just what it is and we got to eat a dick after all of this?
You know, I think about that every day of my life. What do we do? Like, is there something we can really do? I don't think we'll do it. I think that we're not revolutionaries. We some punk ass bitches. Like our revolutions are on Twitter. Like, sure. Ain't nobody, like, when I saw that, what do they call themselves, the No Fucking Around Coalition, I was like, whoa, shit, they rolled up in Stone Mountain with guns and fatigues, but it was like, what, 300 of them? I was like, you gotta take a whole, like, you know what I'm saying? We need more people like that. And that's why I'm like, probably nothing, because we're also not, people are like, I ain't watching the NFL. And then I walk down the street and all I hear is people screaming, watching NFL games.
Right.
People that I know that said they were not going to watch the NFL. So I think, I don't know. I don't know if we're not going to stop going to Target. We're not going to stop Starbucks. So nah, I think we're going to eat that dick.
God damn it, man. And that's, I think you're right, because at the end of the day, even the that fucking, you know, the Minutemen that you're referring to, who like are willing to take up arms and take on a government, they could only find 300 because there's only 300 people in that place that are that principled and believe in that shit that much. The rest of us are living pretty passive lives where we're like, yeah, I don't like what the government's doing, but like, I don't know, bro. I'm not about to starve for this shit. So I'm good. I don't want to get shot. I don't want to put myself in any line of fire. So go crazy, government. You know what I mean?
You just, you know what? I'm going to Disneyland this weekend. Like, you just don't. And it's not that you don't care. It's that it's so overwhelming. It feels hopeless.
Sure. Yeah, I think even if you are a passionate person, there are so many problems in the world that it's too challenging to pick a thing and just focus on that, because then you're like ignoring a ton of other responsibilities you probably also have in terms of protecting people or taking down the evils of the world around us. God damn it.
It feels just so overwhelming. So you're like, I'm gonna go get that Saweetie meal at McDonald's.
And that's the biggest lesson we can walk away with. I think if we got to send people away with anything, if you feel sad, if you feel overwhelmed by everything that's happening in the world, get that Saweetie meal at McDonald's.
You get the nuggets and the Big Mac.
You dip that in some chocolate like that nasty bitch does. You got to go crazy with the Saweetie meal at McDonald's. Well, Ida, I think we did it. I think we did what we could today. Could you tell the people at home where they can find you and what cool shit you have going on?
Sure. They can find me on HBO Max. The name of the special is Fighting Words. Don't tweet me. Don't at me, because I don't read none of it. so don't waste your time. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at FunnyAIDA, Funny Ida. And that's it. All of the stuff is not real until it happens.
Hell yeah. Well, well, follow her. Watch the special November 4th, Fighting Words. And as always, you can follow me at Langston Kerman. And if you so choose, please send us your drops. Send us your messages. Review. Subscribe. Do whatever the fuck you are supposed to do to the podcast. And you can send us everything at mymamapod@gmail.com. And that's everything. That's all I know. Okay. Bye, bitch.